Five, four, three, two, one.
I know you're gonna dig this.
Welcome to the Barrett Sports Media Podcast.
Think we could listen to the radio or something?
Radio? Who needs a radio?
Featuring the biggest names and newsmakers from the world of sports media.
Don't act like you're not impressed.
Now, here's your host, the president of Barrett Sports Media, Jason Barrett.
Back at it once again with another rendition of the Barrett Sports Media Podcast. I am Jason Barrett, and I'm thrilled that you took the time out of your day to take a listen to this episode. We're up to number 11 of season 2. I've got another 6 or 7 I'm planning to produce before taking a break. That should get us up to around Thanksgiving, and then we'll return with season 3 in early 2018. Today on the podcast, I'll be joined by Brian Musburger, the founder and chairman of VSiN, the Vegas Stats and Information Network. If you're not familiar with the product, visit VSiN.com, that's VSIN.com, or listen to them on Sirius XM channel 204. Brian has built a unique network, one which creates audio, video, and written content around sports betting and gaming. Although the brand is still less than a year old, it's made remarkable strides, and I think you'll find their story to be rather interesting. For those of you in the industry with a background in imaging, WEEI in Boston is in the market for a new imaging director. I posted the job on sportsradiopd.com. If you're a production whiz and looking for a great opportunity, make sure to check this one out. Also, if you've got a passion for writing about sports media, I give folks an opportunity to contribute to the website. If you're interested, send along a few writing samples at jbarrett@sportsradiopd.com. Last week, I took a departure from the 5 and 5. I felt one topic had to be examined a lot longer than 60 seconds. This week, though, it's time to get back to our normal routine. So, 5 topics in 5 minutes, and it starts now.
There are 5 minutes remaining.
23 years is a long time spent at one radio station, but an individual's past accomplishments don't promise them any type of future, especially when they put their employer in a no-win situation. That was the case in Seattle, where Mitch Levy and Sports Radio 950 KJR officially parted ways last week following Levy's arrest 6 weeks ago during a prostitution sting. It's a sad ending to what had been a rewarding relationship for both parties, but there was no other alternative. Sticking by Levy could have damaged the radio station's image further and cost them listeners and ad dollars, so now they turn their attention to installing a new morning show, and Levy goes to work on repairing his reputation and proving that he's learned from his mistake. If I was running a brand and he demonstrated he was a changed man with a desire to make the most of another opportunity, I wouldn't hesitate to give him a second chance. After all, who doesn't love a good comeback story? A number of sports radio brands delivered big ratings in the summer book. What really caught my attention is the large number of brands over the past 2 years, which are now pulling in double-digit shares. Whether it's WEEI in the Sports Hub in Boston, The Ticket in Detroit and Dallas, KFAN in Minneapolis, or The Zone in Nashville, the sports format has not only improved with Men 25-54, but in multiple markets, some sports brands are rated first or second overall, and that success is also being duplicated with Adult 25-54. For decades, sports radio's been labeled a niche format, but given the growth of the past few years, niche certainly appears to be much more mainstream than ever before. Take a listen to Michelle Beadle's comments from this past Saturday morning.
Not to stereotype, but I hear a lot from white men on these topics. You guys have a lot to say about how black people should feel, about how women should feel. I gotta be honest with you guys. Shut up and listen for 5 minutes. You will never know what I've been through, what he's been through, what anybody's been through. Just listen.
Amy Dash, who contributes as a legal analyst to CBS Sports Radio and WFAN, said it best. Anytime someone starts with, not to stereotype, but it's downhill from there. I don't think Beadle thought this out, because it seems silly to tell white males to shut up and listen because they don't understand what others go through, yet she herself can't relate to what any white male experiences. I enjoy Michelle on TV when she's entertaining and talking sports, but when she starts preaching and telling large portions of the audience how to act and live their lives, that's when I tune out. Fox Sports 1 made noise with a marketing campaign which took aim at the New York Knicks. The company placed billboards on New York City trains displaying messages such as "Hopeless" and "Nothing will change until Dolan sells the team." The campaign, which was scheduled to run for 4 weeks, also included some positive messaging and was intended to start a conversation. But after facing some backlash, FS1 pulled the ads and apologized for their content and tone. You don't launch an aggressive campaign like this without expecting it to strike a few nerves. So I found myself in agreement with Bob Raceman of the New York Daily News, wondering why executives bailed so quickly. Fox doesn't air NBA games, Knicks guests don't appear often on the network shows, and if you're going to create a network image of being brash and unapologetic, it only helps your identity more to stand up to the league, team, and transit authority rather than cave in. Mike Missinelli lost a weekly TV gig in Philadelphia over comments he made on his radio show. Missinelli wondered why the world needs a female play-by-play announcer on an NFL game and said hearing Beth Mowins on the Monday night opener sounded unnatural. This story bothered me, but not for the reason you might expect. First, I have no issue with a woman calling an NFL game, and in fact, I thought Mowins did a great job. She was certainly more qualified than her male teammates, Rex Ryan and Sergio Dipp. My issue, though, is over free speech. We all have opinions. Mike is entitled to his. In this case, he didn't curse or slander anyone. He simply stated how he felt. Are we not thick-skinned enough to hear the other side of a conversation? This is the same issue that pops up week after week over the NFL protests. If you say you support a player's right to kneel, that means you hate the flag, the military, and the United States. If you feel players should stand for the anthem, you're a racist and someone who supports a dictatorship. The world is not black and white. There are shades of gray. We can't preach about respect, being open-minded, and engaging in conversation to make progress if we only care to hear the points of view that we agree with. Unfortunately, that's becoming the case far too often in today's sports media. As always, I welcome your feedback. You can pass it along on Twitter at SportsRadioPD or by email jbarrett@sportsradiopd.com. That brings us to this week's conversation, and this is something a little different because rather than diving through a media personality's career, I wanted to gain some insight into a new operation. I had a chance to catch up with Brian Musburger, the founder and chairman of VSiN, the Vegas Stats and Information Network, which airs on SiriusXM and VSiN.com. Now, this network is unique because it's a fully dedicated sports radio channel focused on betting, and it features Brent Musburger as one of its lead hosts. Given the amount of money invested annually in sports betting and the way interest has and could grow even more if the Supreme Court rules to legalize sports betting, this appears to be a space with a lot of upside. I wanted to understand how the network became a reality, where future growth opportunities could come from, and what the biggest challenges have been in developing the brand up to this point. One thing I do want to point out, Brian is based in Las Vegas, which is where VSiN operates, and we conducted this chat prior to the shootings, which is why you won't hear anything mentioned about that situation. With that understood, let's get to this week's discussion with Brian Musburger. 3, 2, 1. Brian, let's start with this. Uncle Brent, one of the all-time great play-by-play voices, Father Todd, a longtime respected agent who managed the career of Brent and Phil Jackson, among others. Now with the arrival of VSiN, the Vegas Stats and Information Network, you become the latest Musburger to be thrust into the spotlight and add to the family legacy. So how much pressure does that put on you immediately to have to live up to the standards those two set before you?
I don't think of it that way, but there is pressure. The pressure comes from, you know, I convinced Brent to walk away from a great gig at ESPN, and I want to make this thing work. Not trying to fill any shoes, but there's still some pressure for sure.
Well, let's talk about VSiN because that's obviously, you know, a big priority for you, and it's really been interesting to a lot of people in the sports media business. It's the first of its kind, a full-fledged multimedia sports gambling network. When did the idea for the network first come to you?
I think it's about 8 years ago now, and I was working for my father and as an agent. and negotiated an appearance deal for Brent at either Caesar's Palace or the Mirage. And I went over with him, shook a few hands with some high rollers, and they gave him a generous appearance fee. And I met a guy at the time named Jimmy Vaccaro. And I was a fly on the wall for this fascinating conversation between Brent and Jimmy Vaccaro. And I remember thinking, I flew home to Chicago after that, got in my car and was listening to sports talk radio. And I remember thinking the conversations I overheard in Las Vegas were so much more entertaining and informative than listening to the callers from Schaumburg vent about the Bears. There's so much that you can learn from these guys. And Brent has always stressed the guys that know more about what's going to happen and understand how to use past performance as a way of predicting future outcomes, the guys that understand that are here in the desert. And I knew at that time that if I could take people into those conversations and let them be a part of that, hear how these guys are setting the lines, it's fascinating content. It's a more intelligent form of sports talk in a way. That's a terrible way of putting it, but it's true. The conversation that we're having here, it's not two guys yelling at each other just to take an outrageous position or to provoke controversy. The goal with what we're doing is to try and inform people and let them know what factors these guys are looking at when they set the lines and give you a better understanding of how that's being done. And if you disagree with something you hear, go make a bet on it. There's no reason for yelling and screaming. It's, hey, if you disagree, put your money up there.
Yeah. These guys are paid to have opinions that ultimately provide people a benefit. And if they're wrong, they look really bad because that's someone's livelihood at stake. But, you know, obviously when you've got that intelligent form of banter on the air, it does become attractive to an audience. But there's a big difference between having a product that can generate an audience and a product that ultimately could become a thriving business. So what gave you the confidence that a sports radio gambling network could generate listenership, but also real productive dollars? Because that's ultimately what it's about, right?
Right. It's a huge market. And that's something that a lot of people have been afraid to talk about. But I think Adam Silver estimates the size of the betting market in the United States at around $400 billion a year. Mm-hmm. That's a huge market that nobody has the guts to speak to directly. And that's what we're doing. We know that there's people out there that crave this kind of content. I never doubted that for a second. And especially having been doing it now for a couple months, we're even more confident in the size of that market and the number of people that, even if they're not betting on the games, we still think that this product is a great way of interacting with the sport and discussing sports. We're not taking positions just to be outrageous. We really do want you to feel more informed, and we want you to come away thinking, damn, I learned something from that. I enjoyed that segment. That's an interesting way of looking at things.
So before you launched on air, online, on mobile, on social, you needed a number of things to fall into order for VSiN to become a reality. Take me through the building of the network. What was step one, step two, step three for you to feel like, okay, we've got something here we can go to market with?
Step one was I went around and I pitched to CNBC. I thought it was a great concept. Look, these are people that are used to dealing in the markets. And we could put on a pregame show Saturday and Sunday morning when they're running infomercials and give people the news they need to win. That was the tagline that I used when I walked in. Mm-hmm. And I think the first execs I met with there, they loved the idea. However, the NFL, I guess, was less than thrilled with the idea of one of their partners. CNBC isn't technically one of their partners, but obviously they have a relationship with NBC.
Right.
And word came down that they didn't want one of their partners doing a gambling show, felt it would cannibalize their audience. And we've always known, and the guys that have been responsible for Fox's pregame show or the NFL Today, they know that there's an audience for credible gambling information in the lead up to the kickoffs on Sunday. However, the mandate from the league has always been, let's expand the audience. Let's do fluffy feature pieces that talk about all the good things that NFL players are doing. That's meaningless. You don't learn anything from those kinds of pieces. And the guys that have action on the games, they could care less about the great work that these guys are doing in the community. They want actionable content. So anyway, back to be direct on the question. First step was a ton of rejection. Finally, I saw that the sort of the tech landscape was changing, that the OTT world was going to offer new possibilities where you wouldn't need to have to go through one of the big media companies that was beholden to one of the leagues. And we said, you know what, we can do this on our own. We don't have to answer to anyone. So as I did that, I kicked the idea around with, I'd worked with a guy named Steve Cohen over at SiriusXM.
Yep.
Steve's a great guy who early in his career had run a tip service, and he understood the importance of being able to give credible injury information to fans that were using it to bet on the games. And I wasn't even sure that Steve would be open to the idea of doing anything at Sirius, but he's one of the guys in the industry that I really respect and wanted to just bounce the idea off him and see what he thought about a network dedicated to this kind of information. I knew that he understood sports programming better than damn near everybody in the country. I went out to New York, saw Steve, had him to the office, started talking to him more about what I was thinking and how this could be a standalone network. And Steve believed in the idea from the beginning and said, look, if you can get a couple of names behind this thing, I think that Sirius could be in. And even better, if you can come up with a couple of advertisers, I know we're in it. So I just started working on that. And I guess the next step was landing some names and landing some advertisers. There you go.
Obviously, the biggest one was getting Uncle Brent to come on board because, I mean, look, at that time, he's the face of the SEC Network, one of the most respected play-by-play voices in the history of sports. Obviously, you got family ties, which is probably going to go a lot longer than, you know, if I'm the one pitching the idea to him. But nonetheless, he still has a lot on the table. He's got a lot to give up, and yet you're able to convince him to take the plunge and get behind this thing. So what was it about it that convinced him that it was the time to make that play?
Well, I had some great inside information going into the talk.
that kind of helps, right?
It does. I knew, and I've known that the road is a tough thing to do. And what Brent has done for so many years, just an amazing career. But getting on and off airplanes and going to small towns, actually, it wasn't college football so much as college basketball that can beat you down, because that's a lot of flights in the winter going into some small markets with terrible airports and flight delays and all kinds of travel issues around getting into Kansas or wherever you end up having to go. There's a lot of just bad airports, and it's tough travel. So I knew that he was willing to get off the road. And I also know how much he loves the action in Las Vegas. I spent a lot of time out here with him. When he would have breaks on the road, we'd meet up out here, go to the rodeo, or just go hang out in a sports book. And it's very comfortable for him. So I knew that he loved the subject matter. He has a lot of great friends around town at the sports books. He was the right guy for this. But it was a matter of talking him out of leading a very stable and terrific relationship with ESPN. But he was open to it. He believes that there is an audience that's been craving this kind of information. So he bought into the concept of what we were looking to build. And, you know, he was up for the challenge of sort of reinventing sports talk or the sports pregame show once again, like he did with the NFL Today.
Now, if there's a downside to Brent being a featured player, it's just the fact that he's not 40 or 50 anymore. I mean, you'd like to get 2-3 decades out of him, but, you know, at some point, he's not going to be able to do this forever. So how long of a commitment is reasonable to expect from him in terms of being the face of the operation and doing 4 to 5 days a week on the air?
I'm working his ass pretty good.
I know you are.
But you know what? He's having fun. And one of the best times that we've had out here was as we were building the studio, it was Bill Ady who came over from the Chicago Tribune, and myself and Brent, we were all living here in the casino together. And we'd have meetings in the morning to just talk about how we would cover things. And we would sit in the sports book at 6:30 in the morning, have a cup of coffee, study the lines, and we'd pool our money and make a few bets. And he loves it here. I asked him to make a 2-year commitment to this thing, and he has, but I don't see him walking away. This is too much fun.
But at the same time, from a long-term business standpoint, adding talent to it is important. And you guys have done that. You lured over a few terrestrial radio guys. You had Mitch Moss, Paulie Howard, Ron Flatter, among others. You've got Matt Yeomans, Jonathan Von Tobel. Al Bernstein has been involved with the network. So obviously, you guys have been committed to talent. How satisfied, Brian, are you right now with the current level of programming, and where do you stand in terms of needing to add more talent to it?
Well, we've expanded quite a bit since we got going. We're now starting our day at 4 a.m. out here with Mitch Moss and Paul Howard. And I got to tell you, I believe that that's one of the best new shows in sports talk radio. I love what they do, and I couldn't be more excited about that show, especially with all the change in sports talk radio and mornings around the country. I'd put them up against anybody in that time slot. And it's been huge for us to have them on in East Coast Drive. And we are starting to see some numbers, and we know that that show is really building a huge following. The other show that I absolutely love, Gil Alexander, I became aware of his podcast through legendary bookmaker Chris Andrews. One of the first things I did is I went and asked Jimmy Vaccaro, Chris Andrews, Vinny Maiulo, who are the guys that they've been on the air with from around the country that they really respect, that they think get the content, understand sports betting, and put on a good show. And Chris led me to Gil Alexander and said, this kid has one of the best podcasts out there. He was sort of a star in the world of using sabermetrics to bet baseball, and way ahead of his time on that, and also a former FM radio guy. But Gil's show is absolutely outstanding. It probably gives the best betting information of any show that we have. I think all of the shows have a unique identity, and I think we have a really good blend that appeals to different kinds of bettors and sports fans.
So I had heard that you guys were targeting to try to get to 16, 18 hours a day. That hasn't happened yet, but is that something that you foresee coming down the pipe? Do you want to get to 24? What do you feel is the max of where you can take things?
Well, we are absolutely looking to expand the programming to be a 24-hour-a-day network. Still, probably will make sense to loop one or two of the shows. The other big programming change that we'll look to incorporate as a way to start to take callers here at some point. And that'll give us another style of show that we currently don't have.
How much consideration, Brian, have you given to expanding the footprint for the network into other regions? For example, would we see a show live from a casino in Atlantic City or in another popular casino somewhere else in the country? Is that something that you could foresee, or do you want to primarily stick to being Vegas-centric?
We're paying close attention to what's going to happen with the Supreme Court New Jersey case. That being said, early on, I thought that we would consider doing our morning shows out of New York or somewhere on the East Coast. But the content that we're providing is so unique to this city, and that's how we're different. And we're going to continue to play to that strength. We're proud of the fact that we're broadcasting from the epicenter of the sports betting capital of the world. And we're on the floor of the stock exchange. Our studio is in the middle of the South Point Casino, and we're proud of that fact. And I think it's a great facility that gives us great access to a lot of the experts in the industry. So I'm not real eager to do anything from another city. We've done a few remotes from other properties around town, and that's been great for us. We've done some wonderful stuff with the Westgate. We regularly do stuff with the D in downtown Las Vegas. But as far as other cities, we'll have to see how the Supreme Court decision shakes out, but for now, we're very happy with where we're at.
So you mentioned Steve Cohen and his passion behind the project. Let's talk about Sirius for a second. So from a business standpoint, you mentioned Brent had given you a 2-year commitment. Where are you guys with Sirius as far as your length of being able to work together and ultimately get to a point where you feel like, hey, is this working or not? How long are you guys tied together?
Honestly, I'd have to go back and look at the contract, but we have a multi-year deal with Sirius, and we couldn't be happier with the relationship there. Steve has been a huge champion for the project, and what he's done has allowed us, it gave us great credibility right out of the gate. And I can't imagine another way we could have launched that would have given us that platform and that that stamp of approval that's really been a big part of our early success.
When it comes to success, I mean, the one thing that's great about Sirius is they're not dependent on ratings or advertising buys. It's really about subscriptions. So how do you guys, outside of, I'm guessing it's got to be web-driven because, you know, then you can look at your clicks and you can look at how many people have video streamed and all that, but how do you guys determine collectively between Sirius and yourselves how the partnership is progressing?
I think a lot of the people that listen to your podcast know Sirius probably doesn't keep great information on the number of listeners. You don't get as much data as I would like,
right,
about listenership. However, there's other ways that we get that. The main one being social media. That gives you a great understanding of who's listening and how engaged they are. And we've had a strong response there, primarily through Twitter. But then the other thing is, as you said, through the streaming product, we get far more data about who's watching the product. We know where they are. We know how old they are. We know that they're male. That's the one thing that has surprised me is we know that 99% of our audience is male, a number that's higher than I expected.
Yeah, usually it's 80-20, but that just shows you, you know, the guys are the ones putting their money where their mouth is.
It is. So that's been a little bit surprising, but we get a tremendous amount of data. We know, but the folks that are betting on sports have an average income of over $150,000 a year, and our audience is, it's affluent. I mean, I don't think you would be doing this if, by definition, you should have disposable income if you're betting on sports. It's an affluent male audience, and it's very even from 21 plus. There's not one age group that really jumps out more than any other, which has been also surprising.
Now, would you ever envision VSiN being available on terrestrial radio if a radio group had interest in airing it?
The way we're set up now, we're really happy with the relationship with Sirius. We have been approached by some terrestrial broadcast groups, and, you know, maybe we would provide some short-form programming, but we love the relationship with Sirius.
So let's talk about the video part, because that's a really impressive part of your web operation. I mean, the quality is tremendous. It's television quality. And when I look at it and I'm watching it online, I go, all right, well, if it's television quality, then clearly just like audio is good enough to be on radio, if it's good video, it's good enough to probably be on television. And I've talked to sources along the way who've mentioned, you know, groups like Sinclair and a few others have had conversations with you guys about the product possibly being a television fit. Is that something you could envision for VSiN down the road, regional or national TV, and where do you stand on it at this time?
First, I'm happy to hear you say that you think it's television quality. I'm not that happy with the look of the product yet. I think we have a ways to go, and I know that we're working hard to improve the look and to make the screen a little more data-rich and do more with graphics,
mm-hmm.
And that's something we're always working on and feel that we know that we have a ways to go to get the video product to where we want it to be. We will have some big announcements coming up on video distribution that will help us continue to improve the video product.
The only complaint I ever have is that sometimes it'll crash a little bit. You know, it'll go 3 or 4 seconds to catch up. But the quality itself, like the look, has been tremendous. You could tell that you guys have put some money into the camera operation and making sure you're hitting different shots. And I think the look itself is good. Even more important than that, Brian, is making sure the casino's happy, because at the end of the day, pleasing the business partners is what keeps you in business. And I've been to the South Point Casino. I've seen the glass window studio. That operation is tremendous. tremendously impressive, but it's also taking up some prime real estate on the ground floor. So South Point wouldn't be giving you that if they didn't feel really good about what they were investing in. How long is their commitment with you guys, and how do they feel right now about the way this operation has progressed over the last 7 months since it launched?
I think they're really happy, and we have a great partnership with the South Point and a tremendous long-term, I believe it's a five-year deal to be here and to broadcast from. We are literally 20 feet away from what's one of the busiest and the only 24/7 sports book in Las Vegas. So we're thrilled with the studio. Michael Gaughan, the owner of the casino, spared no expense. He, in addition to giving up that valuable real estate adjacent to the sports book, where I believe those slot machines could yield as much as $40,000 a week in the footprint that he gave up to put our studio there. But he also put in about $2 million to build the glass structure that's right there in the middle of his casino. And that's a tremendous commitment.
Yeah.
But as you go around town, there really is no other property that devotes the square footage to sports gaming. And there's no other family that has the history in sports gaming like the Gaughans. And the other great thing about being here, we go directly to the owner if there's an issue. He's very hands-on and has been very involved since the beginning. So it's really a wonderful relationship. I do believe they're happy, and I think a lot of people are learning about the South Point because of our presence here. And I hope that they remain happy, because we really love where we're working.
Well, along those lines, for them to be happy, I mean, it's got to lead to exposure for the casino. That could lead to hotel rooms being booked more. It could mean more bets placed and just foot traffic. I mean, people know Brent is going to be there. They want to stop by and see him. Then that means they show up at a slot machine for a little bit and invest some money there. So how do ultimately do you guys measure the same question kind of with Sirius, but obviously it's a different business. How do you guys measure whether or not the relationship is working? So how would the casino say, okay, we feel good about this after 5 years that we can justify going forward for another five, and vice versa on your end?
Well, I think the handle's growing here. I mean, that will be for them to evaluate, but I have to imagine they're happy. We know that there's been a number of high profile big bettors that have come in to make large wagers and then have appeared on our air. I would hope that some of that is a result of our presence here.
Mm-hmm.
Ultimately it'd be for them to determined, but it's been a lot of fun to have actually Joe and Gavin Maloof, when they made their big bet on the Mayweather fight. It was wonderful to have them come on the air and talk about the bet that they made and what it's like to have over $1 million riding on the outcome of a fight. I do think we've been good for business. Obviously, at the end of the day, it'll be up to them to decide.
I've talked about the studio. I've talked about the business relationships. And the other part of this is you've also got the stigma to overcome of what previous people have done. And, you know, look, I can only talk about it from running a number of sports stations. A lot of times handicappers come in, they'll throw money your way. It's easy money. They get on the air. They give out an 800 tout number. And ultimately what happens is the programmer is pissed off because it doesn't sound good. The handicapper, if the phone doesn't ring immediately, pulls his betting, and you sit there and go, why are we doing this? Does it make any sense? And in this case, you guys haven't done that. You guys are doing gambling conversation. You're not making it about whether or not you drive an 800 number every time you do a segment. So it is different, and it obviously having credible people like Mitch, Paulie, and Brent behind it does add some legitimacy to it. But you also, as you know, it takes time to convince people that it isn't the same thing that others have done before you.
It's an outstanding point, and it really was one of the hardest that we faced, and so many people had put on those shows that would advertise in the back of USA Today with the 1-900 numbers. They call it East-Westing, where half the audience would be told to bet on Team A, the other half would be told to bet on Team B, and the team that lost would get a free pick the next week. There's been so many shady operators that have gotten into the space that it did make it hard. There was a stigma, but we felt that we brought in a lot of capital J journalists, guys like Bill Ady from the Tribune, Rick Jaffe from Fox Sports, and Matt Humans, a guy from the Las Vegas Review Journal, guys that wanted to cover the industry in a very fair and even-handed way. And I think that we've been able to navigate those waters, but absolutely the people that have gone before I think the industry as a whole is turning, though. As we're talking more about the legalization of sports gaming, people understand that they need to stay away from the businesses of tick selling.
As you mentioned about the business turning, you know, an example of that is in March, ESPN did something very un-Disney-like. They had Brent on during March Madness coverage offering gambling advice for the tournament. Now, that's something they would never have done in the years past. But obviously, his connection there, his new venture, and the fact that they knew he would present it in a fair and professional light made them feel good about it. Where do you guys stand with doing future segments with Brent on, whether it's ESPN, Fox, or anyone, around big sporting events?
I think a lot of the leagues are going to take a wait-and-see attitude towards – everybody wants to wait and see what's going to happen with the New Jersey case. Once that's settled, I think there's a lot of people jockeying for position right now, knowing that there's going to be just a tidal wave of sponsorship dollars – and interest in the kind of content that people need in order to be successful at sports betting. It's a massive industry, a $400 billion industry. There's a lot of folks that are trying to get ready and anticipating what's going to happen here, and I think that the amount of money that'll be spent will make the FanDuel and DraftKings wars look like child's play. There's a lot of big players that they're going to be going for their piece of the pie here, and I think that we're well positioned for when that happens.
Well, the good part is you were at the forefront of it, but as you mentioned, when there's that much money riding on the table, everyone else is going to start looking at it and want to be involved in it. You saw, I'm sure, Fox Sports Radio got into the space, adding shows on Friday and Saturday night that are out of Vegas now, and I'm sure there are probably going to be other networks. Do you see more audio providers getting into this space?
I would say so. They should. There's a lot of room in this space. And I think that people have seen that this, the early success that we've had, and they'd be foolish not to pay attention to that. Unfortunately, I think what Fox did, they're backing the wrong horses. They need people that have good reputations in the business, and they need to do it the right way. Otherwise, they're going to repeat the mistakes of the people that tried to do this before us.
With any business, Brian, you know this, there are growing pains, and you've been operating now on the air since, I think it was February, so we're talking about 7 months. When you look back over the last 7 months, you mentioned earlier going through some of the ups and downs. What have been some of the biggest missteps that you feel you wish you had had some advice to avoid along the way?
Well, one of the hardest things that we faced, and one of the things I'm happiest about, there's so much money that gets thrown at you in this business to get in bed with some shady characters. And as a startup, it's hard to say no to that money early on, but mm-hmm. It was the right decision. And we knew that we had to show that we're going to be going about this in a different way. And so saying no to some of the deals that were presented to us was challenging. We had to think long and hard about it, but, I'm very happy with the way we were able to navigate that. We've corrected course on a couple of things. We're really happy with where we're at now in terms of the talent and the lineup that we have. I think that getting into the expanding and getting into East Coast drive time was a really big thing for us. But overall, I'm very happy with the way things have gone. In fact, I'm thrilled with it. We're ahead of where we expected to be at this point. We're very fortunate to have made some good partnerships with American Eagle, who's been building out the website and handling the design of our app, as well as with the South Point and SiriusXM and Steve Cohn. We found some great partners, and I think that that's been the key to the growth that we've experienced.
If there's one area, from my standpoint, where I think you guys have opportunity, I think it's the fact that you've already got the lineup, you've got a good product. It's about awareness. And right now you guys have Vegas, you've got social media, you've got SiriusXM, you've got your website, and those are all strong. But as you know, building this thing takes time. You're not even into it a year yet. So it's gonna take more time to get a lot more people familiar with this. How do you guys go about increasing the visibility of the network in the next year or two?
We've wanted to be cautious with that because we want to be confident in the product. And we still have a few kinks to work out there. I mentioned biggest amongst those is really I want the video product mm-hmm. to be a lot stronger. And I think there's a huge opportunity for growth there once we get that dialed in. And we've brought in some good people to help on that front. And I can announce now that we're bringing on Stephen Shalansky, who was EVP at Starz and is going to be helping us with our video distribution. And I think that that's going to lead to a lot of terrific growth on the video and OTT side.
So I wrap up with each guest, Brian, by doing something I call quick hits. It's four quick questions, just the first thought that pops to your mind, all right?
Great.
The next greatest play-by-play voice next to Brent Musburger is who?
Spiro Dedis.
The year when sports gambling will finally be legal in the United States will be?
Next year.
The most interesting client you guys have ever represented is who?
Kurt Rambis.
And then finally, you're betting your mortgage on one game. Which expert do you turn to and trust the most?
I will listen to Matt Eumanns.
So Brent is probably not going to want to hear that answer.
I love Brent hyping it, but I'm going to listen to Matt.
He is Brian Musburger, the founder and chairman of VSiN, otherwise known as the Vegas Stats and Information Network. You can find them on SiriusXM Channel 204, on Twitter at VSiN Live, and online at VSiN.com. Brian, this has been very informative. I appreciate the insight. Wish you and the crew the best going forward with the network.
Thank you so much, Jason. I truly appreciate it.
This is the Barrett Sports Media Podcast.
My thanks again to Brian for sharing his time. I thought the story he told about the NFL interfering with the CNBC partnership was particularly interesting. I liked their tagline, "The news you need to win." That was very cool. And what's a shame is partnering with CNBC would have made a lot of sense. It's unfortunate the NFL prevented it from happening rather than trying to find a way to make it productive for both parties. I also thought Brian's backstory on knowing Brent and how he convinced him to sign on with the company was insightful, as was his feedback on overcoming previous stigmas, expanding the network, and welcoming other groups into the sports betting content space. I hope you guys found that discussion to be informative. But that brings us to the end of this episode. Don't forget, I work with sports media brands as a sports radio consultant and strategist. I have a lot of knowledge to share and results to back up my quality of work. To find out how I can help your brand or company get to the next level, visit sportsradiopd.com. My services and contact information are posted there. In the words of Kid Rock, if it looks good, you'll see it. If it sounds good, you'll hear it. If it's marketed right, you'll buy it. But if it's real, you'll feel it. So be authentic in everything you do. Until next time, I'm Jason Barrett. Thanks for stopping by.
I'd say that was a pretty successful broadcast.
Thank you for listening to the Barrett Sports Media Podcast. To stay updated on the latest sports media news, follow Jason on Twitter at SportsRadioPD and visit our website, sportsradiopd.com.